I mean, do you realize? I think this is the first time in a while we've all been in the same room together, just between travel and Blizzard and
it is pretty much
all that shit. How's everyone been?
Well, I can't tell you how fucking ecstatic I was to have Thursday and Friday off. I really was.
How so?
I needed that. I was happy.
No.
Why?
Did you feel like driven to it?
I'm just like tired. I'm still like vaguely sick, I think.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was frankly thrilled that I had one like bonus day off this week, and then whenever they texted on Friday afternoon, I was just like, fuck yes, this is so nice.
It also, I think, for me, it felt good to be able to like fully decompress after mm-hmm. spending time at home where it's like, it's fun.
Yeah,
but,
there's that too.
You know, you kind of need a vacation from that vacation when you're back.
Ooh, that's a good phrase.
I just came up with it.
That's very clever.
I got it from no one else.
You should put that on a wooden plaque and sell to Target.
Stitching on pillows.
Like, it's wine o'clock.
And mommy, I love that. Mommy's sippy cup.
Yeah, other things that will appeal to
girls' night out.
I didn't do anything or vacation to speak of, productive or otherwise, really. And I didn't really do anything when I got back. And I still have these moments where I, like, yesterday I finished work at 8, and then I was, like, I actually decided to just play, you know, some games for the rest of the night, and that worked out. But then this morning I got to a point where I was like, I don't know, should I watch? No. I kind of, like, did that. I'm not going to watch. Should I play? Like, I don't know, playing these games. And I was like, well, I could do that writing I've been trying to do, and then my brain was like, nah. Don't do that. I was like, what am I left with? Just sitting here.
Yeah.
That happened to me earlier in the week. I was like, well, you've been taking notes on a new idea. Why don't you get some writing done? I was like, that's hard.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
It's like, work. <It's cool.
This is the podcast where three friends sit down and watch a terrible, troubled movie and attempt to fix it. I am Chris, Grandmother Toad Ravel.
I am Brendan, Kato Storyboy Grishler.
I am Lee, Magic Bean Delahanty.
With those very diverse nicknames, you may have a guess that we are doing Brothers Grimm, the 2005 movie starring Matt Damon and Heath Ledger and
Jonathan Pryce,
Monica Bellucci, slew of other people.
Yeah.
Sort of a little bit of fantasy, a little bit comedy, a little bit who knows what the fuck, and we'll try to figure this out as best we can, but of course we could not get through this without a cocktail to grease our mental wheels. And Brendan, what did we drink tonight?
We drank a Butters Grum, which is 2 ounces of rum, 2 tablespoons of batter, which I'll get back to, 3 ounces of boiling water, and a pat of unsalted butter on top. The batter is composed of 1 stick softened unsalted butter, 2 cups light brown sugar, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1 pinch of ground cloves, and 1 pinch of salt. You cream all those ingredients together and you refrigerate it. Then you place it in the bottom of a preheated mug, 2 ounces of that. You add the rum and the water. You stir until it's dissolved, and then you float a pat of butter on top of it.
I liked it. It's very boozy up front, but once you stir in the butter, it kind of takes that edge off.
It is very boozy. It was boozier than I thought it was. If I had done this again, I would have added less booze and more water, because even for me, it was just a little bit much, I think. I don't feel drunk, but while drinking it, I was like, this is a loss.
I tasted no booze. I tasted only disgusting sweetness.
Butter.
And I didn't drink it after a few sips.
Yep.
I do appreciate doing kind of a warm, heavy drink, because we're currently like under a big freeze here in the city, so.
Yeah, it's
right officially
now.
Like the coldest day, right?
Yeah, it is.
So
for another hour.
It was nice to try doing some sort of hot butter drum thing, even if it didn't work out exactly the way I would have hoped. I think it mostly worked out well, for me at least. So
what I do
I'm
want,
glad we tried.
Well, I'm glad we tried as well, and I'm glad we picked something that I think is a little bit of an adventuresome choice. I feel like packing a batter into the bottom of a mug was different for us.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that we did something different.
Yeah.
This movie, I think, is fair to say we were all... Did we all see this movie when it came out?
No.
I had never seen this movie
up until like a week ago.
Lee and I definitely saw it in theaters, but I believe you and I both kind of confirmed with each other, neither of us would remembered anything about this movie.
No, there were things that... The vague memories I had when I watched the movie again, I believe I used the word, like,
floored or shocked at some of the things that that happened that went against my memory.
Okay.
Because they were so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I think I remembered bits and pieces, and then I was like, okay, what I remember this movie is about, like, blah, 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 like, the con artist, blah, blah, blah. And,
right.
Like, I pieced together, like, a story that you would generally cobble together logically.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched the movie, I was like, oh, they did that?
Yeah.
Why?
There's a lot of
why?
Zagging when you think it should zig.
Yeah, well, not in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in the McElroy's way.
Well, and much like the smashed mirror at the end of the movie, so goes the structure of the movie.
So, Lee, if you would like to read us the plot synopsis, please.
Fucking sure. So, we got William Grimm, played by Matt Damon. And we got Jacob Grimm, played by Heath Ledger. This is during the Napoleonic Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrive at a French-occupied German village to rid the town of a witch's ghost. But after they kill the ghost, it's revealed that the brothers Grimm have actually set up a fake witch to trick the town. Afterwards, as they are celebrating, Italian torturer Mercurio Cavaldi, played by Peter Stormare, takes them to the French general Delatoum, played by Jonathan Pryce. Delatoum forces... Is that how you say it? Delatoum?
I guess.
That's how I'm going to say it.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Delatoum forces them to solve a mystery. The girls of a small village of Marbaden... I'm just going to say Marbaden, because I'm not going to...
I think it's Marbaden.
Fake,
it must be. It's German.
French.
It's got to be German, though.
Yeah.
So Marbaden. Yeah.
So the girls of this village are disappearing, and the villagers are convinced that supernatural beings are responsible. The Grimms are charged with finding who is responsible, but they soon discover that it is the work of a real supernatural force, a beautiful yet evil 500-year-old.
Isn't that always the way, fellas?
Yeah. We'll get ya. Thuringian Queen, played by Monica Bellucci, who's stealing young girls to restore her own beauty. Now we go back to the past, set the scene. Long ago, King Childeric I came to a forest to build a city, while the queen experimented with black magic to gain eternal life. A plague swept through the land, and she hid in a tower while her husband and everyone below her perished. Her spell did grant her immortal life, but not the youth and beauty to go along with it. So her youthful appearance not only exists in her mirror, the source of her life, as an illusion and nothing more. She needs to drink the blood of 12 young girls to regain her beauty. 10 have already been reported missing. The queen is working an enchantment to regain her beauty with the aid of her werewolf huntsman and his magic axe, crow familiars, and various creatures in the forest. The Grimms, with the help of Cavaldi and Angelica, played by Lena Headey, a knowing huntress from the village, intend to destroy the mirror queen. After another girl goes missing, Cavaldi takes the Grimms and Angelica back to Delatoum. Because they have failed, Cavaldi is ordered to kill both of the Grimms. But after convincing Delatoum that the magic in the forest is actually caused by German rebels, he sends them back. While Cavaldi stays behind with Angelica in the village, the brothers attempt to get into the tower. Jake succeeds and discovers the queen and the power of her mirror. Meanwhile, another girl named Sasha is captured despite Angelica and Cavaldi's efforts to rescue her. Jake rides into the forest alone after a spat with Will, who follows him. After mistaking a dummy that is smashed into the tower for Jake, why is this in the summary? Will realizes that Jake needs him to believe in him and assist Jake climbing up the tower.
What?
On the roof of the tower, yeah, they're like saying what's already, they've already said this, he's gotten up there, but now we're hearing about it again. On the roof of the tower, Jake notices 12 crypts in which the 12 victims must lie. When Sasha's body comes up from a well, the werewolf takes her to a tomb. After rescuing Sasha and taking the werewolf's magic axe, the Grimms return to the village. Delatoum captures the brothers and believes them to be frauds. French soldiers begin burning down the forest, and Cavaldi represses his sympathy to the brothers. But they are eventually saved by Angelica. The werewolf is revealed to be Angelica's father, who is under the queen's spell. It turns out that he is only able to keep on living due to an enchanted spike that is lodged into his chest. And without such, that spell is broken. Angelica is drowned by her father, becoming the 12th victim. The brothers reach the tower while the queen breathes an ice wind that puts out the forest fire. Delatoum notices the Grimms have escaped and goes after them with Cavaldi. When Cavaldi refuses to kill the Grimms, Delatoum shoots him but is later impaled by Will. Will and Jake enter the tower where Will falls under the queen's spell when the queen takes the enchanted spike from Angelica's father and thrusts it into Will's chest. Jake shatters the enchanted mirror in the tower, preventing the queen from completing the spell that will restore her youth. While with the last of his strength, Angelica's father destroys the rest of the mirror by jumping out the window with it. Will, attempting to save the queen, tries to take back the mirror and falls with him, and both men are killed. Outside, Cavaldi survives, having donned Grimm's faux magic armor. He finds Will's body and recites an Italian curse.
That tower falls apart.
Jake escapes, and Cavaldi informs Jake that he can break the spell and awaken Angelica with a kiss, which in turn resurrects the other girls and Will. With the menace gone and their daughters returned to them, the villagers of Marbaden celebrate and give their heartfelt thanks to the brothers. Cavaldi stays in the village and joins the villagers for a feast. Angelica kisses both the grooms and tells them they are always welcome in the village. The Brothers Grimm decide to pursue a new profession, presumably recording fairy tales, although they are now wanted criminals of the state. Because I don't even think this mentions that they killed Delatoum, but they do.
It says he impales him.
Yeah, it impales him. One of the queen's crows is seen flying off the left shore of the mirror, still holding the queen's watchful eye, and presumably her living soul.
Presumably, indeed.
Well, because they say this is what the lying con artist brothers say, right. That, like, if you leave a part of her... something alive that the soul can, like, find a way to hide. That's not, like, any real...
Right, again, that's a bullshit thing that they say to, like, dupe an idiot.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and because they do that, and they live happily ever after, and then you see the shard kind of flown towards the camera, and then it's like...
Well, maybe not. Which is a great way to end, like, any movie you ever want to end. We set fade on a happy occasion and be like, yeah, I gave it a year.
Five years
later, everyone died.
Exactly. And unhappily. Again, we're finding the Wikipedia summary is a lot more charitable to the to the plot of the movie.
Well, it says things like out of order. It also says like two times that Jake goes to the top of the tower.
There's also something interesting that it didn't mention, which is, I mean, not interesting because it has no relevance to the plot, but the entire opening sequence where we go back in the past.
Oh my God.
Jacob and Will and their little sister and their mother, and their little sister is very sick, and they've sent Jacob to go, like, I guess get medicine or something.
From a doctor.
Yeah, and then, like, Jacob comes back and he's like, I actually gave all the money to a guy for magic beans, and Will hits him on the head, and he's like, magic beans! And this is, like, a recurring thing throughout the entire fucking movie, where Will will just start screaming out about magic
beans!
Yeah. Like, anytime, like, Jacob is doing something stupid.
Remember when you bought those magic beans, you fucking idiot?
Yeah, yeah, whenever he goes to give him money the first time after they, like, get rid of the fake witch, he's like, here's your money, or would you rather have magic beans or something like that? It's like, guy, that was, like, 20 fucking years ago.
It did result in the death of their sister.
It is true, and I get that, but I think at a certain point you have to be charitable to the fact that he was a child.
That's true.
He probably feels terrible about it. Not that we know, because the movie doesn't seem to care.
Right. This, again, it doesn't surprise me that this was not included, because it is not a relevant plot point in that it does not come back and affect them in any way, shape, or form, but it's interesting that with all the crap this goes into, it, like, lops off that entire prologue.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, and it's sort of there just to fuel a constant antagonism between the brothers.
Right.
Okay, so as we've kind of gotten at now over a few comments, that there's a really big problem with plot structure in this movie. It's actually, I think, quite reflected in that Wikipedia summary. It has to jump around so much to make sense of it, and the movie is not...
Yeah, the plot summary is in a sort of different order than the movie.
It's in a, dare I say, more coherent order.
Yeah, it's telling you, like, ahead of time, like, here's this queen.
Right, this will matter,
This is gonna come up later, whereas in the movie, it's, like, halfway through, they're like, oh, wait a minute!
Yeah.
I went back and I read about this queen!
Yeah,
like, you didn't know there was a queen?
Well, and it's so far into the movie when we're finally getting to this kind of core myth of the whole story.
It is, yeah. For all the prominence that Monica Bellucci has in terms of, like, trailers and the cover art and everything like that, she's in it for, like,
five minutes,
and she doesn't really do a whole lot until the very, very end.
No. And to no effect, really. It's a lot of cooing, and then, sorry, bye, Monica.
Tell me I'm the fairest in the land. And overall, there's just too much weird shit to try to mix in, because it's, like, the Brothers Grimm, and so, like... At the end of the day, you're telling a story, like, it's about this queen, and maybe she can have a huntsman, that's fine, maybe he's not a werewolf, I don't know that I need him to be a werewolf, I think it's a little weird. But then also, that, like, one of the girls that goes missing is, like, Gretel.
And Little Red Riding Hood.
And Little Red Riding Hood.
And there's a reference to the gingerbread man.
Yeah, one of the girls becomes a cookie.
But she, it's a mug, too!
Oh, okay.
It's so weird!
So that's sort of one of those plot digressions that I was just like, why? It's a total cul-de-sac of a scene, because... Okay, so we know that Sasha has to be captured somehow, because it's a character we know the name of, so I guess the stakes are, like, medium-high if that character gets captured. But the way it happens is so convoluted and weird. Sasha's by the well and gets mud splashed on her face.
There's a crow that dives into the well, and as she pulls up the bucket, that she finds the quote-unquote dead crow in there. She's like, oh, a dead bird, how sad. And the bird comes back to life, starts flapping mud on her face.
She wipes the mud off, and then you see that she has no face. In a moment that's actually legit sort of upsetting when you first see it. You're like, ugh.
No, it is creepy.
But then the bad CG kicks in.
Yeah.
And we just see eyeballs pop up on like a...
on a pile of mud.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a walking...
gingerbread
man.
It's like a mud demon.
Yeah, well, it's a mud demon because it's not like solid yet. But
yeah,
like,
it's like a glocky little...
If it wasn't bad CGI, it would be legit like horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there is something like... I think for me that it's like the creepiest part of the movie. And when I watched the first time, it was so jarring to me to see like this very, like, that was, like, the most Gilliam-esque thing, I think, in terms of
works
in the movie, so it's jarring to see this happen. And then it's even more jarring when it like, sucks in Sasha, constitutes itself into the shape of a little gingerbread man, but
tastes
still made of mud, bites off its thumb, and is like, I'm delicious, and runs away.
Yeah.
Oh, plumps back down into the well,
right? Yeah, and it's like, you can't catch me, you can't catch me.
And
like,
then what happens?
You're made of mud.
And then what happens is her body appears
in another well,
an enchanted forest out of a spring.
Right, it like floats, I guess, from the well up to like somewhere.
That's the only girl that we see get kidnapped. I'm pretty sure because I think we only see Gretel like sort of like
we see Gretel, we see Gretel and Red Riding Hood.
But you don't really see like what happens.
No,
you see like oh, and then she's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we see it cut, and it's supposed to be.
That's the first one where you're like, they stop it?
Yeah.
Because the Grimms happen to be at that well, and then it's just very bizarre, like, that you have to... Why did you need to summon a mud demon?
Yeah.
Well, and they strain the plot
and
in
then
the...
And she appears.
Yeah. Right. Well, they strain the plot in details like that to include... Yeah.
Fairy tales.
But fairy tale references that aren't even necessarily Grimm stories.
Yeah.
Because Gingerbread Man and Riding Hood aren't.
Aren't.
But, like, yeah... Why not just... I don't understand how she turns into a cookie and then her body appears. Like, the body that got sucked into this weird thing.
Is it supposed to be that it just spattered back out in the spring, which would have been connected in some...
I don't know.
...circuitous way to the well?
I just don't know why they don't just take a girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And move her body to the crypt.
Also, to be... The other weird thing, like, one of the weirder sequences is when... I think it's Heath Ledger's forest is full of spiders. And they bring it back. And... one of the little girls hears a voice calling, and so she goes down to the horse and like, oh, horse, and the horse like starts spewing spider webs out of its mouth, draws the kid in, like chokes it down its throat, and runs off to the forest like a large protruding CGI belly.
Yeah.
What is that a reference to?
No, I fucking...
Because I've read a lot of the Grimm's fairy tales because I find that sort of thing fascinating.
Me too.
I don't know, but like it feels like it must be, right? Because when you have every other character go through, like, oh, this is Gretel. This is Little Red Riding Hood. It's like, where the fuck is the story of a horse eating someone who's full of spiders?
My take on that was almost like, I could kind of see that maybe being something you could have been inspired by Grimm a little bit, of just sort of, like, something mundane being twisted into something kind of horrible and gross. But I don't, to my knowledge, it's not a reference to anything. And it's sort of similar to the Mud Demon, where it just looks so bad that you don't feel affected by it. Like, conceptually, I think that's upsetting to look at. But what we saw on the screen was stupid looking.
I found the horse just distasteful. Like, it was just, like, it was unappealingly, like, not in, like, a creepy way. Just in the way I was like, I don't like to look at this.
Well, and it's not even clear why the kid was even called out of bed to tend to the horse.
But, I mean, they're all, because they hear her voice. That's the same reason why What's-Her-Face went to the well.
Yeah, but again, if you can track people.
Right, why don't you just, like, call them to the woods?
Yeah,
that's how fairy tales work.
Right, you don't have to use the elaborate mechanism.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the... I want to talk about the bigger plot thing, though.
What?
Peter Stormare and his old boss.
Yeah. Jonathan Price.
That's a big digression.
All right,
it's not necessary to the plot.
This is the thing that I was like, what? So I saw this movie, and I 10 years ago, over that, like 12, 13?
12.
2018 now.
No, 13, yeah.
Yeah, and so I remembered, like, after I watched the trailer again, that, oh, yeah, like, the whole thing was that they're, like, con artists, and they pretend like they hunt witches and shit, but they don't actually... And I remembered the prologue bit, and then I pieced together, like, oh, okay, so, like, they must, like, wander into this town, and there's, like, a real thing that happens, and they get run into that.
Yeah. You'd think.
Because that's how you would imagine it would happen, if these con artists, and then someone is like, help, I need, like... Because they're famous. They are famous for what they do.
Right.
A kid even says it in the movie.
Right.
Like, oh, these guys hunt witches.
Yeah.
And so, like, you would think that somebody would recruit them to be like, help me take on the witch. And they'd find out that it was real. And they'd be like, oh, fuck, we're in over our heads now.
Yeah.
But no, in the movie, They you see them do their first initial witch con, and then they get caught by the French police.
Yeah.
And they're taken to, like, some local French ward.
Right.
Presumably, like, in a conquered castle, because this is, like, Germany.
Yeah. Right.
And he has this other, he's like, okay, I hear that you've been, you know, pulling these cons. Where are these missing kids in Marbaden? Yeah. And they're like, we don't know anything about that. And they're like, well, if you don't, then I'm going to send you to investigate it?
Yeah. Right. Well, and they never explain that, and which even makes that whole digression so unnecessary.
Yeah,
like it felt indulgent, honestly. They're just like, wouldn't it be cool if they just dress up Jonathan Pryce in a crazy outfit and have him like grimace at this like plate of slop he's being served? Like, and the snails thing, like, what was that?
Yeah, I mean, in a realistic scenario, once they say we don't know anything about those kids, he says, okay. Torture yeah. them, and then they don't say anything and they die painfully.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how that happens.
Like, but then it's like you have to ask from just a basic plot structure standpoint, why did we need either the torture or Jonathan Pryce involved, period? Like, why do they need to be there?
It makes less sense for them to have to be caught and then taken to, like, what is the point? Because is it because he thinks they're lying and he's trying to catch them out? Is it because he thinks there's another con artist and that these other con artists will, like, smoke them out?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like, my charitable interpretation that I could come up with, like I told you guys from watching this, is that he wants to send them in because they are also German, and that he thinks it's easier for him to find out what's actually happening if he sends some German people to this German town, as opposed to just showing up there with his militia and being like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But, like, again, this is never explicitly stated. No. He never says, like, I need you to do this. He says, like, well, you're doing this. Like, but why?
And that kind of thing can't just be implied. Like, we kind of need that stated outright, or else there's just no apparent justification for that whole scene. I actually have a major point, not a major, but to me, it's a pretty major point in the plot that I feel to be a pretty big hole, mechanically. We see in an earlier scene, I think it's the first time he's up in the tower, he smashes the mirror, and there's no ill effect, and the next time we're back in the tower...
Like, there's, like, a ping. Like, he pings it with a rock.
But you still see, like, a crack.
Yeah.
And then it's healed, and she has no reaction, and it's healed up, but later he smashes it again, and she freaks out. So it's like, so that ping before didn't do anything?
You would think that if this were a better structured movie, the implication would be he sees that happen, like, a chink falls off her face, and he's like, yes, this is what I must do later on.
Right.
But in the movie, a rock hits it, and then he leaves.
Theoretically, then, if you'd smash the mirror, would everything have just stopped?
I guess.
Is that the logic?
She would have shattered. She would have shattered in her weird cobweb bed, you know?
It's like, it goes against the fairy tale concept by applying too many weird rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the way that they're, like, they seem to, like, come up with them fast and furious at the end, but they can kill off a bunch of people only to bring them back with, like, well...
No, true love's kiss. Broken,
and I break his one person, and I know everyone's alive again.
Yeah, and also, I have a family curse. Let me renounce that family curse and bring down your tower.
The torturer, Cavaldi, somehow, I don't know, I mean, again, this could have been, what this could have been, amusingly, is like that he thinks he's bringing down the tower with a curse word, but like, that's already a part of the curse breaking. However, it makes it doesn't imply that, and therefore makes it look like this random Italian guy says a word that makes the tower fall down.
Yeah.
And then... He's like, by the way, I remember the story.
Yeah.
He's from Italy.
Yeah.
This is Germany.
Yeah.
He's like, I was told this story as a boy.
Yeah.
And he remembers, like...
No way have these stories been popular at this point.
And then it just sounds like, well, you fix it with a true love's kiss, and I'm like, but that's not it. Like, but it's about an evil queen. Like, how would a true love's kiss ever factor into this? Like,
well, it's mishmashy, and I also think a general plot problem is... They borrow so many different pieces of things that it breaks the plot up into really weird, fractured, disjointed episodes that don't really connect or go together.
Well, it feels like Into the Woods made by idiots.
Yeah.
Like someone who wants to do all these intersecting fairy tales, they're just like, I don't know, and maybe Little Red shows up for a scene, and maybe Cinderella's there? I don't know. Fuck it.
Well, and they make decisions that I feel like chop the plot up even further. Like we were kind of saying earlier, we only learn about the main crux of the plot halfway in.
Yeah.
That needed to be way moved up. And we have Lena Headey's character, the Huntress, has a connection to the plot-ish, but it's, like, not strong enough, so you're kind of like, well, why is she here if not to just deliver this much-needed exposition way too late? Like,
well, it's also weird, too, because then later on, Jacob is the one who's like, oh, I remember this story, the queen's still alive up there, and blah, blah, blah. Like, where did you get this from?
So then why did we need...
Yeah. Why didn't you say this from the get-go? Like, people remember things when it's convenient to the plot, and it's not presented as a revelation, it's sort of like, oh, by the way, this thing.
I think what came through for me was I just got the impression that Gilliam just didn't care. Like, it's sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, I would, like, again, this was written by, the script was bought and then rewritten extensively.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine that, I mean, I hope it made a lot more sense.
Right.
Before the director and another writer got their hands on it, because I do feel like that the Italian-French quarter was, like, written in after as, like, a way to impose stakes when there did not need to be stakes.
Right.
There were already stakes.
I feel like the idea of Jonathan Pryce as this buffoonish general is a very Terry Gilliam thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm also thinking back into, like, Ian Holm and Time Bandits, where he plays Napoleon. And so I feel like Terry Gilliam, like, sort of loved the idea of grounding it in some historical reality, but, like, I don't fucking care about your historical reality for this. Like, I don't care what's happening in actual Germany while this is going on. This is a fantasy story about, like, an evil witch who lives in a tower. Don't fucking give me your shit about Napoleon invading Germany. This is the story I care about.
The fact that the Napoleonic Wars enter into it all is nonsense. It just feel like the world around them doesn't exist.
Right.
Like in a fairy tale. It's about a village.
Yeah. I don't even mind that per se, but I want that inclusion to be motivated and to feel like it fits with the rest of the story just from a basic mechanic standpoint, which it doesn't.
He's just like the secondary villain, right? Like, you're watching this, you're like, okay, like, he's gonna get disposed of. He's not gonna really matter. I know this is going to happen.
He reads his fluff.
Right, and I just have to, like, sit here and fucking wait for this to happen. Like, I don't want to fucking sit there and watch this shit happen. Like, it's so boring to me because you know exactly how it will play out.
Mm-hmm. Brendan, you wanted to talk about the mechanics of the curse.
I don't understand the curse, to begin with. So first of all, there's a lot that, again, similar to the plot, that comes into play as characters just sort of remember things or realize things. When Matt Damon is up in the tower, he's like, oh, it has something to do with the eclipse. And then later, an old lady's like, blood moon! He's like, oh, blood moon, that's like with the eclipse, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what's happening to the 12 girls, or if they're going to be, like, asleep forever, if they're going to die. No one ever explicitly says. The queen is just taking blood from 12 girls. Is that, like, part of the curse that you need to get them there? Can she just go in and, like, prick their fingers
right
while they're sleeping, steal some blood, and come on out again? Like, at no point is it explicitly stated what's going on. We don't really get the explanation for what the mirror is. We don't get a good explanation for what that spike is, except that I guess it keeps the huntsman alive. I guess
and enslaved?
Yeah, and it later keeps Matt Damon alive, but then he doesn't need to keep alive because he got better whenever...
It was convenient for the plot?
Yeah. So there's like it's like once upon a time level magic bullshit here, where it's just like, oh, well, there's this other magic thing that counteracts the other magic thing before, and there's also this magic thing too. You know, just fucking go with it.
So the what I'm gonna throw at you, and I don't remember this, but like, I don't think that there are any curses in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's just magic. I think that there, like, is the book learned about the book. The queen has like a book of spells. So she learned a bunch of like magic spells.
Yeah.
And the predicament that she's in at the start of the story is because she was tricked. Is what Will says. Given she found a spell about eternal youth, I don't think she needed to have been tricked. Maybe she could have, but like easily, like. Oh, like eternal life. And
right.
It's the classic sort of monkey's paw thing
right.
where she gets that, but she doesn't get
youth.
Eternal
youth.
She
still ages.
So she ages. And so she needs to find... She has like another spell slash ritual that she wants to do that seems to require the moon and the stars to be aligned a certain way.
And
also the blood of 12 women. So like that, I'm on the surface, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with like, there needs to be 12 crypts and just points like that sort of like, that sounds like, you know, some sort of arcane, mystical shit. Like you got to put them around and you have to drink at a certain time to recite the words and all that. That sounds like witchy stuff. And I'm fine with that. The spike, I think she puts a curse on the huntsman.
I mean, divorced from everything else, I did like the spike detail. I thought that was cool.
I don't mind it. I think my biggest point is that it keeps overly complicating things by keep adding things. And then also whenever she drinks the blood, and she starts to get younger. But then when she's still talking to Matt Damon, she's like, finish the spell. I'm like, is there's a spell left? And
I was
then she's like, say the words.
Too.
Like, what words?
Well, but then they seem to imply the words.
Like,
were,
she like, has to say,
of
like, yeah,
and
he has to
like,
say,
you
are. Yeah, and I guess that's the end of it.
But
like,
then none of this was made explicit. And
I know.
Because I agree with you, Lee. I'm good with
no,
a lot
I'm
of the elements
too.
Here.
It's just that they're so vaguely explained.
No, the problem is that they don't even really go into, like, oh, magic is real.
Yeah.
Until half of the movie. And then 75% of the movie, they're like, there's a book of spells here.
Right.
Well, like, ideally, you would have introduced the specific spell and the steps. Like, somebody would have
done research.
The old lady in the village.
Oh, yeah. Like, you need to do X, Y, Z and say this. And that, and then that way, like, you would understand what was happening in the final scene.
Right.
I think they tried to hand wave some of that with the old crone in the village being like, the old ways are returning, but that's never followed up on in a meaningful way.
She was the source of information where they, like, went to her. Right. She was like, it's this, you gotta do this. But, like, she's just this comic relief character who screams at people.
You could have also accomplished the same thing by having the Brothers Grimm actually know all of this shit back to front.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that they're faking it doesn't change the fact that they pulled from sources of, like, actual...
Right, which I frankly kind of like... Okay, so can I also say, so when I was watching this movie, which, again, I had never seen before, all I knew of it was that my understanding was that they were con men who were, like, running these scams and, like, duping people into, like, taking their money by making them think they were witches and monsters and shit. So I thought going into it that was the case. They get to the barn, and this crazy effect sequence happens where they're flying through the air, and they shoot an arrow, and she's like, her robes are like billowing around her. And I'm like, oh, wait, like, is this a fucking real witch? Like, is this a real, like, evil witch? And, like, they're not actually con men? Then it turns out, no, they are con men again. So it's just, for me, that entire sequence was so confusing that I kept watching it the entire time thinking, like, but am I wrong?
But
like,
it seemed to establish a through line, which I wanted to burn to the ground, which was every time any of the magic shit, curse-related or not, happens in this movie, they're all like, oh, these effects must be very expensive. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, drop it.
It's a long time before Matt Damon stops being like, the trees are on tracks. Right. This is crazy.
And I'm fine, by the way, if we start at a point where they know the story, but they're just taking advantage of it and sort of cynically manipulating people who might believe it. But they needed to break through to this belief faster.
I mean, I get your confusion with the beginning, but I think that is actually a well-done thing. I would argue. I think that what I like about the beginning is that if it's shot, like, as it is, like, as if this is a fucking legit witch, because then the guy they've duped leaves, and, like, and then, like, everything starts to sort of fall apart, and, like, the springboard becomes visible, and someone flies off on it, and the guy who was playing the witch reveals himself to be, like, this buffoonish guy.
And the mask actually comes apart in an interesting way.
So what I like about that is that you're seeing what the dumb townspeople see. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, they're putting on enough of a smoke and mirror show that, like, it looks real to them. You're like, as the viewer, you're seeing, like, the con, basically.
No,
and then you see the truth behind it. I don't think it's done as well as it could be, but no, I think that's why it should have been.
I consider that because, like, that was my initial impression. Was like, oh, is this, like, what that idiot is seeing? Like, he's seeing, like, this crazy witch with her crazy robes, like, flying through the air.
Ideally, it would have cut back and forth.
Right.
Within the same sequence. Like, you would
just, like, a guy swinging on a rope being like, woo!
You would have done that montage thing where you see the dupe, and you see like, a scary witch, and then you see, like, the reality. Like, the next cut is, like, you know, a guy behind the scenes, like, billowing smoke out, like, oh, I gotta pump the smoke.
That would have actually been really funny, too, I think.
And I think maybe, and, like, frankly, it should have been, because we're already, like, I think we know from marketing and from an early assumption that they're con men anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not sure what the movie has to
lose. I don't think that you're supposed to be confused. That scene is not intended to, like, dupe the viewer. The viewer does definitely love the watching movie about con artist Brothers Grimm. So, I think that that is a failure of the scene.
Okay.
I think that if you are confused, like, I think the purpose of that scene really is to illustrate how the villagers see this shit.
My bigger thought is that I was thinking it's something designed to dupe the viewer, which I find strange and pointless.
I don't think it was designed to do that. I just think it's not doing what it's designed to do very well.
Yeah, that's also
I do think conceptually it is a good idea. They just needed to acknowledge during the scene more of the bits and bobs.
Yeah.
This is one I struggled with as well of... What is the theme or message?
Wait, oh, sorry. Can I say something real quick?
Oh, of course.
So just sort of vaguely relating to the idea of magic in this movie and stuff like that. So first scene, we established that Jake buys magic beans. He was duped. They're not magic. His sister dies. Later in the movie, you would think that there would be more of a payoff in terms of Will being like, I feel really bad about that time I hit you in the head as a child and called you an idiot because I'm looking now and there's a real magic witch in a tower.
Oh, good point.
And I feel bad about this sort of thing. And this is affecting our relationship negatively because I keep screaming beans at you all the time. And so I'm learning something. Like, I realized that I made that assessment and I was right at the time, but I was wrong to doubt you entirely and to doubt you. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, there's never, like, a moment where he sort of realizes, like, oh, I can act too quickly, or I'm like, I will, like, rush into judgment against my brother.
Mm-hmm.
No, where the movie goes wrong is it... So wait, Jake is the dreamer.
Jake is the Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
One's the Ledger and one's the Matt Damon.
Yeah. So it puts Will in the main protagonist role.
Right.
And so, like, everything sort of revolves around him, I would argue. Like, I don't think that Jake's arc is as important. And so it's framed in a way where like, Will just has this burden on his shoulders of, like, having to protect Will, Jake, from himself.
Right.
Like, that's what he feels bad about. And there's, like, I think the message or the main theme of the movie is supposed to revolve around their brotherhood.
Yeah.
But, again, I think that it's too... I actually think that it's trying overly hard to sympathize with Will when it doesn't need to. Because, like, they seem to focus a lot on like, oh, it just sucks. Like, you know, I lost my sister because he did this when he was a kid and I just died. But I hate him, but I have to protect him.
Yeah.
He's just an idiot. And if we're talking about the theme, like, that is, I think, what the theme of the movie is. And there's, like, a line where Jake says, like, oh, I just need you to believe in me, Will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that the movie is it supposed to be these brothers, like, coming together. I don't think it really does that.
I think that I agree with you. It's definitely supposed to be the intention. The intention is supposed to be, like, the through thread of this movie is supposed to be about the brothers' relationship.
Yeah.
But it never really comes
to and I mostly just...
As you said, Brenda, that moment doesn't come.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't come.
I would also think that maybe if you were to make this movie about the brothers' relationship and you have the concept of Will feeling that he's obligated to watch over Jacob, maybe it should be that, like, Will was the one to inadvertently contribute to his sister's death, and so then he feels like he has to protect his younger brother because he thinks he in some way was, like, you know, accidentally killed his sister. Yeah, in some not actual way, but in a way.
You know what they never... Not they should get into this, but you know what they don't get into that will, like, really would throw a wrench in things is, like, what if those were magic
beans? Yeah! I was just going
to
say...
There was a moment where I kept waiting for that to sort of be a thing years later.
I was going to say the very same thing. And just considering the movie keeps wanting to remind you about specifically the beans, I thought some kind of payoff would be, oh, they actually would have saved your sister. You know what I mean? Like, they would have done something.
Or maybe, like, it gets him up to the tower, or maybe it gets him back down from the tower at the end. Like, the witch has magic beans, and he's like, this is it. This is how we do it.
It's just frustrating because they seem to think that that's all it took to establish this idea, but it's not there.
Yeah.
Well, so, like, theme and message. Is the theme of this supposed to be these two brothers learning to love each other again?
I think it's supposed to be, but it's not.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, there's definitely supposed to be about the brothers.
Brendan, you had a really...
in the title.
Yeah. That's right.
I think it was Brendan, or maybe it was Lee, but one of the two of you made the I think it was Brendan, that one of you said that brother should kiss brother at the end.
Oh.
Like, forehead, cheek,
Brendan and I both arrived at that conclusion separately.
Yeah.
But Brendan vocalized it.
I agree, by the way, but I think if you really wanted to punch in on this brotherly love theme, that would be a great way to do it.
No, I agree. It's like Frozen. It's like fucking Frozen, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, true love will thaw a frozen heart. Yeah.
Frozen
and it's
bad.
Like, it's not a love between a man and a woman. It's a love between two sisters. So here, like, and again, like, he doesn't have to go in and, like, smooch him on the lips. And it, like,
nor do I
because
want him
I'm
to.
Also, frankly, I'd be afraid in this movie that it would be like, ew! Or he, like, goes to kiss him on the mouth and it's like, whoa,
stuff. That being said, I don't agree just because I think the true love's kiss is just fucking stupid anyway.
No, that's absolutely.
No, I agree with
absolutely.
You.
It comes out of nowhere and it has no bearing on the exact
it's
none.
More of a point that, like...
He's been stabbed through the heart.
Yeah.
They were really trying to sell any kind of romance angle there, but they couldn't seem to decide which brother was going to get it, so they're just like, both? Neither?
Both, no one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because, I don't honestly, if you put me in a room and you had a gun to my head... Of, like, who does Lena Headey's character like more? I would say Will.
I'd be inclined to say Will, too.
Probably.
Again, I think this movie positions Matt Damon's character as, like, the
protagonist.
Yeah.
She also has the most visible connection with him in that scene where she was like, you feel like you have to protect him, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I think she's also the older sister.
Right, yes.
And
so
I think they actually have, like, a more... they have more things to bond over than...
But I think that's why True Love's Kiss just sort of materializes out of thin air, because they're like, we need to get some kind of breeding pair together now, so true love's kiss.
By the way, what I have to put out is the way that she, like, cradles his face afterwards. His whole face, he, like a dog.
No, it's exactly the way you would cradle a pet or something. She's like, oh,
and
it's, boy.
And Heath Ledger, like, goes like, he moves his head around in his hand.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
When I saw that shot the first time, I wondered, like, did he just, like, do that and you thought it would be on, like, the blooper reel, but they, like, kept it in or something?
Like,
Because it reminds me of his How to Succeed in Business. Right? Yeah. Like the actor.
Yeah,
when he goes up to all of his bosses and like nuzzles them.
Yeah.
Because it does still look like she's reaching up to like scratch a dog behind the ear or something like that. It's very weird.
The one thing I guess I give the movie credit for is that neither one of them ends up with her. She just decides to stay in the village. She's like, come on back sometime.
Yeah.
So like, I do like that, like, she didn't be like, hey, Matt Damon, I'm coming with you.
And we're kind of getting into this now, but I think we should also, we should start to talk more focused about characters. We're already kind of chatting about that. I think the general problem, and I think you guys would agree, is the characters aren't, they just aren't characters.
They don't have much to them.
Yeah.
They're very thin. They're as thin as the premise, to be frank. They're very thin, sketched out characters.
Yeah.
So Cavalti, I guess, has a heart of gold, but I guess.
Yeah.
But again, he has a heart of, much like the curse, he has a heart of gold that appears when it's convenient.
Yeah,
for the plot.
Only at the end.
Jonathan Pryce's character is
just sort of a
buffoon.
A decoy antagonist.
Like, yeah, not quite like a buffoon, but like a, like, like sort of primping and like self-absorbed.
All he wanted was a little order
and maybe a nice slice of quiche,
which I actually kind of thought was a funny moment.
It was. I think it's a fun line to like end his life on.
Yeah.
But again, it's just,
I actually think in the case of, especially with Jonathan Pryce, I thought his character was meaningless, unnecessary, and I wish it wasn't there. That said, I actually think his performance was good.
No, I agree. I like Jonathan Pryce in pretty much anything.
Yeah.
So, like, it was fun seeing him in this movie, but still, nonetheless, every time I cut back to him, I have to, like, roll my eyes a little bit and be like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah. No, I liked his acting. I liked, in the first scene where he's, like, a bubbling pile of something is placed in front of him.
Yeah.
What am I looking at you and what am I being suffered?
What creature gave birth to this?
Who gave birth to this?
And I also love how proud that like serving woman is. She's like, blood sausage served with sauerkraut, sir.
Yeah.
I picked myself.
Yes.
He's like, I'm sure you did. Going back to Cavalti for just a second, I personally was sort of enjoying Peter Stormare's performance. I think it was too much, for sure, but I found him entertaining.
It shifts too much, but I really enjoyed his off-the-charts, like, taking it to 11 intro, where he, like sort of Moulin Rouge style, like, his head appears into frame sideways, and is like, now you're going on an adventure!
Yeah.
And then they get, dragged by horses, and, like, but then he sort of settles down a little bit, but then he gets crazy again.
Yeah.
I feel like, in general, though, Terry Gilliam needed to rein him in.
Do you know what his character needed if he was going to do that performance? Is one of those, like, sort of like clock face thin mustaches that
that
would have been fun.
I think the one thing that like really, like, I'm not a huge fan of his character in this movie. The one thing that I really hate is how he always calls them Grimmy. He like refers to them like together as Grimmy also. He's like, oh, find the Grimmy. It's like,
right.
I feel like someone like did that once as a joke and the writers were like, that's beautiful. Do this 100
more
times throughout the script.
I did appreciate though at one moment, I think one of the villagers like snatches his hairpiece off and I was like, thank God they gave me that, because the whole time
yeah,
I kept staring at this like, what a
like,
fucking obvious hairpiece. Lena Headey's character is,
I mean, there's not much
on
to say.
Like, she could have been an interesting character, but she's not, nothing is done with her.
Yeah.
I think she could have been, I agree, I think she could have been a great foil to both the
I think
Grimms.
She's connected to, the way her character suffers is connected to how the plot suffers, because, like, for some reason they feel like it's important to tie it back to her father.
Yeah,
and her sisters are also missing.
Yeah.
She's like, my whole family's cursed, but like, yeah, but sort of not really at all. None of them are cursed, really. Like, you're just, a lot of unfortunate things have happened to all of your family members.
Yeah.
And, like, you thought your father was dead and he's not, but, like, we shouldn't really be talking about your father. This isn't really about
The business about her father is just, like, again, it's another, like, side venture that the movie wants to go on that has no relevance to anything.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter that her father is the queen's henchman. It doesn't matter that he's, like, a werewolf also. Like, it has no bearing on anything.
I feel like, ideally, the queen is responsible for all the bad things that happened to her, but her father is dead.
Yeah. No, I if her father were out of the picture, I'd be fine.
Her deal, and actually this movie in a whole sort of reminded me of Van Helsing, which is another terrible fantasy mashup, but her character reminded me of Kate Beckinsale's character in Van Helsing, in that they set up this person who is introduced as someone who is like good at fighting and is gonna like show them around this town and is sort of like your intro character or whatever, but she doesn't fight, she doesn't really do anything to move things along, she's just sort of there. Like, she has the one scene where she talks to the toad and that's sort of called back later, but she doesn't do anything meaningful. But
you're
she doesn't
of,
do anything meaningful in the
sort
movie.
Of, like, she's set up that way. Like, she has a cool, like, she has a couple cool scenes of how, like, she's, oh, this is, like, a tough,
I
like,
would
no
love
business.
follow through on that, though.
Yeah, but then solid concept. She does seem to know her way through the woods, but that's all that happens with her, really. And then after that, she doesn't really have a whole lot to do.
Yeah.
She is, like, clever in the, like, the scene with Sasha. She, like, does manage to save Sasha.
Yeah, she's, and like, she does somehow manage to get the magic axe. We don't actually see her doing it, but she's carrying it later on.
That's
so she
true.
Must have. You want to talk plot holes, how the fuck did that happen?
She reaches for the axe in that one scene, but they clearly pull her back and some other soldier picks it up.
Yeah, so she's smart enough to somehow get the magic axe and use it and bring it with him to the woods.
I just wanted more, because I feel like Lena Headey could have done more with this character if they gave her any other material.
Yeah.
It would have been fun. I want to get into the Brothers Grimm as well. I personally had a very difficult time telling them apart throughout this movie. I don't even think the actors look that similar. They're just such similarly written characters, and they say and do similar things that, to my eye, there needs to be much stronger differentiation between the two of them.
I don't know that I had that problem.
Yeah, I think Heath Ledger has more characterful bits to do in the movie. Like, he's more socially awkward, and he always looks sort of uncomfortable, and he's making weird faces a lot
of
the time.
And he's writing his little notebook.
Yeah, so, like, I think that, if anything, he comes off as a stronger character because William Grimm has, like, nothing to do in this movie aside from be the protagonist.
He's just sort of the bland, requisite protagonist.
And he's also kind of a jerk. Frankly, one of the bigger problems in this movie for me is that the brothers don't seem to like each other that much until maybe three quarters of the way through.
Yeah. No, and the thing with Will is that he acts like an arrogant asshole, and, like, in normal story, that pays off where, like, really he's covering up, like, all of his past hurt under it. Because, like, he does have a bad childhood. His sister died. And, like, he feels responsible for his brother. But, like, that seems to just be, like, him.
Yeah. He's just kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
It also felt to me, they were going for, I think, a, like, almost like a Cain and Abel thing. But it just didn't track. And
I don't think that they went for a Cain and Abel thing.
Like, antagonistic brothers, one's always beating up on the other. At least emotionally, in this case, over beans.
Well, that's
Cain
not
Abel
the same thing as, like,
killing,
Cain, Cain killed Abel.
Yeah, there was
I suppose,
stuff.
But
they're just, I don't know that it's Cain and Abel to just say that they are at brothers at odds, at loggerheads.
Yeah.
For, you know, and we see the baggage. Like, we see why that's like that. And I think that's a solid hook for a story.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a solid hook for how they became con artists, especially how Will is so gung-ho into this business of, like, you know, this formative thing happened to me when I was five. Like, fuck it, I'm going to do it to other people because, like, otherwise I'll be just keep being a victim.
Yeah.
As I said at the beginning of this movie when we watched it, is I mean, they were actually swapped. Like, the roles were swapped between the two characters. Because I thought that Matt Damon, to me, looks like more of a younger, dreamier, like, bookish.
Baby face,
yeah, like, the one that would have bought magic beans. Like,
right.
And Heath Ledger with his, like, glasses and his, like, sort of more taller, like, thinner.
Angular face. Yeah.
He seems more like of a cunning sort that would have been the mastermind of this con scheme.
Yeah.
And so, visually, I sort of have a problem with the way the brothers are.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, we had said, I don't remember if I actually said, but initially when they were first cast, they were cast in the opposite role of the Petition to Switch. I do sort of wonder what that movie would have been like.
I don't know how, I mean, again, I don't know.
I don't know if it would have been better,
if
but
the acting
I would be interested.
I think it would have been a better choice, probably. But I also pointed out, I had difficulty kind of accepting Matt Damon in this world. For whatever reason, his look and affect is just too modern for me to really buy. And I get that this movie
is very Kevin Costner Robin Hood.
Yes.
Yeah,
or I also kind of mentioned Interview with the Vampire with, like, Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Like, it just doesn't fit.
I think I also said this when we were watching, is that, like, because Will is sort of rakish, playboy sort of character.
Womanizer.
Charming. Yeah, he's like the quote-unquote good-looking one, and Heath Ledger is not. And I think you could have done this where the younger one is the rakish, charming one, but he's also the one that wants to live in fairy tales because he sees himself as, like, a sort of, like,
dashing hero.
I think you could have done it that way too and have the other one be socially awkward and insecure but very smart and cunning and, like, actually very, like, Machiavellian.
And the one pointing out, oh, that's going to be expensive. Oh, we'll have to buy these supplies. That would make a lot of sense.
And, like, get your head out of your ass. This isn't a game. This isn't a fairy tale. Like, this is don't forget what we're here for.
The one thing I would say about Monica Bellucci's character, I guess, going to that, I do like the fairy tale that they have in this world for her, where she's
she builds a thing to get rid of the plague.
But, like, like, completely neglects the fact that that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so she just, like, they say how, like, you heard her screaming across the ocean.
Yeah.
As she was, like, dying. And it's, like, admittedly, it's a bleak thing to tell a child as you're right below the...
Oh, my favorite part of that is
yeah.
Lena Headey's father is telling her the story.
As a child.
Like, oh, did I upset you?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And as I told you guys...
Her old bones are still up there rotting a plague. Are you sad?
Hey, don't cry. As I told you guys, I thought his energy when he said that was sort of like, but I didn't do it. Like, there was such a weird energy to that scene where he was like, I'm involved, but I'm not gonna say.
It's bizarrely cheerful, I think, for me. Like,
yeah.
They show her sisters, like, playing around this tower in the background. Like, this tower that he has this horrible history that he's telling her about
let's
where
go,
a woman died.
Let's go picnic
play.
There.
And he's like,
yeah.
Does this scare you for some reason? I don't know.
It seems like he's being a dick.
Yeah.
It seems like he's asking it for, like, rhetorically.
Yeah, like, he's, like, trying to get a rise out of her or something.
Yeah.
Well, and pivoting to him as a character, he exists less than all the others, and the reveal that he's a werewolf, that, you know, Lena Headey's dad is a werewolf and is serving the queen in this movie, has no weight.
By the way,
because we don't care about him.
There's no reason for him to be a werewolf.
Yeah.
Not a werewolf.
Well, yeah. Other than they wanted to put, it's, I feel like that's sort of the go-to quote-unquote twist in a lot of these sort of Little Red Riding Hood stories where, like, Little Red Riding Hood is a werewolf, or the wolf is a werewolf. It's dumb. Like, it's very dumb.
No, it is complete bullshit. I think it's mostly just that they had him, and they also wanted to throw in a wolf, and they were like, ah, but what if?
Some of the worst CGI.
Oh, yeah. The CGI in this movie, by and large, is appalling.
Yeah.
The wolf...
Is that what we're getting into next?
Let's get into visuals.
Well, yeah, let's go into the visuals. The Gilliam-esque nature of this. His look does not lend itself well to the low-budget CGI that they are doing in this movie.
And we're talking bargain basement CGI.
Very, like, PS2 level. PS3, if we're being charitable.
No. I think the crows looked...
No, we're not being that charitable.
I think the crows looked fine. I think the... But everything else, like, the spiders looked so bad. There was such...
Every bug, yeah.
Major edges all around those spiders.
Every bug literally looks like it was just, like, plopped on top of the frame.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You, at no point does it look like the spider is actually crawling around. It's just, like, it's, like, bloop, it's, like, crawling on a frame of film.
Even when they did the scene of the brothers...
Flying around in the air.
Yeah.
That looked horrible.
The lighting on them did not match the room at all.
It did not.
That looked really bad. You kind of mentioned earlier the spider horse thing looked terrible. The mud demon looked really bad. The problem, I think, is I think a lot of the visuals in concept, as we kind of mentioned, could have been effective if they weren't so shittily animated.
Yeah, they would actually look more effective if you didn't have a lot of money. Because, like, let's get into, like, the fact that, like, maybe they didn't have a lot of money to make this and the technology wasn't great. Then don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, so part of the problem was apparently they did start out doing practical effects, but they didn't have the money to do them very well. So they essentially doubled the order of animation and graphics they needed from the finishing company. And so they're just like, this is what we can do for you right now. And that's just what they had.
The one thing also I know from the Blu-ray is they mentioned that the wolf was originally done practically. And they don't show it. They show them compositing the CGI wolf over it. And you can see the wolf, like, kind of, like, underneath it as they're filming it. And I really just feel like, even though it might not have looked good, it would have looked better than the wolf that they added in after the fact.
It would have felt like it existed in the space.
Yeah.
I felt like there was a similar problem to 1998 Godzilla, where that never for a moment looked like it existed in that world.
Yeah.
It had no weight. It was... I did sort of like that slow untransformation scene. Like, back from wolf to man, and it's like... you saw us like one wolf leg. Again, it's a cool idea.
Storyboard-wise, that's a solid idea.
Yeah.
He's like a man with, like, skinny wolf legs.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good.
Guys wearing tree costumes would have looked better than the CGI trees they ended up with. Like, if you had guys just sort of sliding across, or even if you did, like, stop motion, I would have accepted
this. No, I was thinking about that creepy Alice in Wonderland.
The Jan Svankmajer.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lot of shit you can do, just creepy, practical-looking things.
And you know what? Even if you could commit to a look that is sort of what we would call janky, I guess, but if you stuck to that as your visual style, I think there could have been something really affecting, in that. Where you could just be like, yes, it's wrong and it looks not of this world. But, like, and there was even, do you remember that moment where they, like, very obviously slow down the camera speed on the horse when it's thrashing around? And you're like, why?
Yeah.
each of these failed visuals have the nut of a really good idea, and I think there is maybe a vision that was really interesting, but it totally whiffed.
Yeah, I mean, the mud monster is a horrifying concept to me. Again, I think part of the fact of wanting to be practical is that the CGI is just, the color is just off and doesn't match the grittiness of the world.
No, everything looks too round.
It all just looks pasted in, all of it.
Do you want to talk very briefly about your favorite thing with the crows?
My favorite thing with the crows?
Lifting the guy up.
Where they're lifting, where the huntsman, her, Angelica's father, is being lifted up to the tower top, and like five or six crows pick him up by his sleeves.
I think it's like three on each arm.
Yeah, just like lift him into the sky. And it's just like, in a movie full of CGI bullshit, I was like, this is the biggest moment of bullshit.
Just have him like apparate. Like,
yeah,
even...
like why do you need to see him get up there? He got up there. Who the fuck cares?
I'll actually say the biggest CGI bullshit is the shattering animation on the queen.
Don't hate that.
It was Power Rangers or like Superman 2 level shit. That was really bad. Flat and very pasted on looking. Ugh, I hated that.
I think for me, it is the CGI moment that is the closest realized to what
I
want it to be.
I would agree. I think that's the one I like the most out of all the ones in the movie.
Like, it's still, again, not great, but it's the closest one of them comes to looking good. And it does tend to fall apart.
I think it goes on for too long, but I like the first shot of her face crying.
Yeah, I like the shots of her going, like, with her hands up, like, screaming, like, as she falls apart. And they do cut back to her too much. And there are times when they do a wide shot for some reason that she looks really weirdly fake. Monica Bellucci probably wasn't there for that sequence. Yeah. So they just, like, CGI'd something.
Because you can see when it falls away, it doesn't look like the bits under the chunks of glass falling away was CGI'd in. It looked like they just covered someone with, like, a gauzy black face mask.
They might have, and they might have just sort of digitally pasted mirror shards falling off.
And I guess they're just like, well, it's going to look like she's like this mummified creature underneath the glass. I'm fine with that. I just thought it looked like garbage.
What if they just chroma keyed like a bunch of green, the actual shards?
I feel like I've seen older movies where this has been done better.
And like just project her face onto these like shattered shards.
Yeah. You can do a lot of really weird and unsettling things with practical effects.
Yeah,
and Terry Gilliam has done a lot of weird, unsettling things with practical effects.
And weird, unsettling things with practical effects that I really enjoyed. And it was a bummer because I thought going into this movie, like, well, maybe the movie sucks, but the visuals are still cool. But they're not.
Yeah.
It felt to me like, it just generally speaking, like, Gilliam was asked to do a very commercial movie, and then he just didn't want to. And so this is the sort of, like, half-cared-about
right. I mean,
result.
There's, like, a shit ton of behind-the-scenes problems with the Weinsteins who produced this movie and Terry Gilliam. So, like, at the end of the day, I don't really know who I'm blaming for all of this, except to say that it's probably a little everyone's fault.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to blame the Weinsteins, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, they're garbage people.
Yeah, garbage in, garbage out.
It sort of reminded me in that way of, they also blamed, like, Island of Dr. Moreau on behind-the-scenes shakeups that were just constantly happening. And maybe not to the same, like, lurid degree as that movie, but I guess you kind of see the same result, a movie that makes no sense, that is disjointed, and everyone's just sort of checked out.
Yeah.
Do we have anything else you want to...
Well, I just want to say, beyond the CGI, I hate a lot of things in this movie. I hate the costumes.
Yeah. Oh, I enjoyed some of the costumes.
Well, I hated the
mirror armor.
Yeah, the fake
mirror armor. I hated that.
And I didn't like a lot of the... I felt overly... done to death in a Tim Burton-y way of, like, their weird gadgets that they use to stop witches quote-unquote stop witches.
Yeah.
And I just wish that they use more, like, real things, like crosses and holy water and, like, things, you know, a bag that they claim is pixie dust or something.
I liked bits and bobs. I liked her dress. I liked her headdress. The queen, rather.
I liked the queen's costumes. They were fine.
I thought those were good.
Yeah, I liked Lena Headey's initial costume. Huntress outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked
but
that too.
Do you agree with me that that woman doesn't own that, like, patterned red dress with, like, that weird, like...
You said that.
Under corset. That's what I'm saying. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree with that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think she can undress if she wants to. I'm like,
sure. But I'm just saying, from a character perspective, if you're introducing this person,
woman... Yeah, I think she does. I think it's a village in, like, the 1800s. I think that, like... You're given dresses.
I mean, for me, what I think it was more like, oh, like, she has to look fuckable at some point. So,
right.
Like, I should probably get her out of those
pants.
That's how I read it.
We see her in a dress.
Yeah.
Do I think that that's her dress? Yes, I do, because at the end of the day, I don't care if she hunts, like, there's going to be a party in the village someday, and she's going to be expected to wear a dress.
I guess.
Yeah, it was more weird to me that she chose to wear it in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird point from, like, a character or plot decision more so than anything else for me.
Yeah.
It's like, again, I really do suspect it was the wine. Like, because you had said how, like, Samantha Morton didn't get the job because they were like, oh, her arms are so fat.
No, yeah, they said she didn't get the job. So she said later, like, yeah, the Weinsteins didn't give me the role Lena Headey got because they said my upper arms are too fat. Quote, no one would want to fuck that.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jesus.
So it would not at all surprise me if they were like, oh, like, she has to look fuckable at some point in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently Lena Headey also fought a lot with Jerry Gilliam, which
I can believe that.
Yeah, I mean, Terry Gilliam is also known for being a bit of a difficult ass himself.
Yeah.
Who would like to start with fixes?
There's a couple easy things you're going to do. I mean, I assume we're all getting rid of Stormare's character.
Yes.
Yes.
Jonathan Pryce.
Yep, yeah. They're both out.
I'm keeping the past. Like, I don't know that I'm not going to put the flashback at the beginning, I think, but I'm keeping the concept that as a kid, Will... their sister, Will and Jake's sister was dying. Jake bought these like magic beans instead of buying the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that resulted in the death of their sister. And that event, I can't find words tonight. A barrier in between them, I guess,
okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
In their relationship.
A rift?
What do you put? Yeah,
yeah,
a rift.
Yeah.
A rift is what I was looking for. caused a rift in their relationship. And also... spurred Will to sort of become the con artist that he and Jake are in modern times. But in my version, like you normally would have, after we get the introduction of their characters and how their con sort of works, because they're famous, like, you know, fairy tale hunters, witch hunters, they're called to this village where they quickly discover that, like, yeah, there's actually, like, some real shit, like, real woman and children are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And, Will is like, well, we can't, like, we gotta get out of, we gotta find an excuse to get out of this one, because, like, we can't solve, like, real woman going missing. But Jake wants to, like, stay and investigate it. I guess what I should mention is, what I want to establish, this is gonna come up later, is that whenever that magic bean scene happens, which I still want to happen fairly early on, I think, because I want to get the information out there,
mm-hmm.
I want Will and or Jake to have kept the magic beans.
Or,
like at least one.
Yeah.
That's going to be important. And that the magic beans, that there's going to be some specific way that they were given to Jake, such that, like, you know, the guy said some sort of mystical thing of, like, you know, when you most need them, or this is going to, like, help save the one you love or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be part of the flashback, is, like, what the guy says when he gives the beans to Jake. I'm actually keeping Lena Headey's character because I like the idea of her, and I want to actually make her a character in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what I'm going to have her do in this movie is sort of have her stand in as, like, a surrogate sister for the one that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so her story is pretty similar. Like, her dad died and two of her younger sisters are missing. And so she's still younger than Will and Jake, but she's the oldest of, like, this, of her family. They are both people who have, like, lost all of their loved ones. So they sort of share this, like, orphan-y type, like, you know, they don't really have a family anymore. And she's also really invested in getting this, like, you know, this mystery solved because her sisters are missing. And so Will, her and Jake are the ones that are, like, adamantly into it. The rest of it can play out as normal. I think I might even keep the huntsman. I don't know that I want it to be, like, the father. I don't want it to be a big deal. But I like the idea. I'm fine on the surface of the queen having, like, a servant that helps her do it. But I think how the way the curse works is just that the kids go into the forest, like, let into the forest.
Right,
and what I want to have happen is, like, a lot of witches do this and a lot of fairy tales are like this. I want the temptation for a lot of these kids and women that get sucked in to be, like, you know, they are promised that they can help someone that they love.
Yeah.
Because I like this as a comparison to what happened to Jake and how, like, it was good intentions that got you in a bad place. And so all of these women are, like, you know, captured forever. The rest of the curse can play out as, like, pretty much as normal, where she has to cast this spell. She has to get all 12 girls. Angelica is still the last one. And instead of, like, any nonsense about, like, true love's kiss, at the end, they shatter the mirror. And then I want the bean to come back, where Will has died in the process. Oh, no, I want Jake to have died in the process,
okay.
The younger brother. And Will has this bean, and he, like, remembers what that guy told Jake. And he gives the bean to them, and Jake comes back to
life. Nice. So, yes, I'm also getting just completely rid of Jonathan Pryce and Peter Stormare.
Peter Capaldi.
Capaldi. Never get rid of Peter Capaldi.
Never. He's in this movie. It's about him. I would start on Angelica's father telling her that story. Because I feel like we need to establish that as the core myth very, like, right at the top. And I feel like you can almost lead that in as almost sort of a fake out, as you think you're being told a Grimm's fairy tale already, but not quite. This is like proto. Mm-hmm. And then there you can kind of drop in little morsels that lead to other Grimm's fairy tales. But essentially, I kind of want to establish that family that maybe the lead in is sort of establishing that story and then the dad going missing and Angelica growing up, kind of like raising her sisters on her own. Then I think you can pick up with the brothers being charlatans. Similar to your setup, they've also just sort of been called to town to solve this, and they think that this is going to be another thing that they can just sort of, like, smoke and mirrors their way through.
Yeah.
I do want to have the younger brother, I know names are escaping me, I don't even care.
Jake is younger.
Be already kind of inclined to do storytelling, and that maybe he makes a little bit of money on the side telling stories to kids or people in the towns where they're already stopping to solve this problem. He's already kind of having the germ of the idea of using this stuff that they're doing to create other stories. But I think that's also the vehicle I'm going to use for telling the audience and for telling Angelica what happened with the beans and the sister dying, where he can kind of, he tells a veiled story that is made clear in flashback as he's telling it, what actually happened. We need to meet the queen, probably around Act Two, and I think it's where she becomes evident in this mirror that the actor friends the brothers employ kind of, like, stumble into somehow, and that she sort of enthralls them as well. I'm kind of cutting the huntsman out, and I'm using them instead.
Okay.
And so they are kind of using, they're flying under the radar a little bit, but I think Angelica and the two brothers are going to eventually realize that something's up when they seem to be, like, more together and, like, smarter than they were before, because they're outlandishly stupid at the beginning of the movie. And I kind of want that to pay off a little bit more. I wanted that to sort of be, like, a check-in of, like, they're sort of helping to facilitate things. Once the children are drawn into the forest by the queen, they're the ones who are kind of pricking the fingers, burying the bodies, whatever they have to do. I wanted to get more into Angelica's story of what that would be like to be in this situation. I was kind of also toying with the idea that maybe she is of the lineage of the queen, and that's why her family is sort of front and center for why the queen is going after her younger sisters. I think I still want those to be the ones that are taken. I think I also want to make it not so much that the queen is going to be restoring her decrepit body in the tower, but that the spirit that she's, whatever is left of her is fully contained in the mirror, and that her goal is to use whatever crazy blood magic she's getting from these sisters to possess the adult body of Angelica. I think the brothers, in learning to actually believe that this stuff is real, kind of then can come to a spot about, like, oh, I'm really sorry, I completely doubted the veracity of the magic being thing, regardless of whether or not those could really help or not. I just wanted to say that, you know, I realized you were trying to do the right thing and you kind of fucked up. Whatever, fine. Mm-hmm. We can let that go after 20 years. They foil the queen's attempt to possess Angelica's body. No true love's kiss bullshit. I would say instead they part as friends, and the brothers just have a renewed sense of brotherly love between them. And they are still going to travel from town to town, but instead they are fully going to invest in being storytellers and not ripping people off.
All right, so mine is almost a complete rewrite of the scenario in general, because, like, all I really cared about was the premise of this, which is to say that the Brothers Grimms are two guys who wander around and claim to defeat magic shit. So the Brothers Grimm in this are more patterned after the Brothers Bloom relationship-wise, the Rian Johnson movie. They don't seem to hate each other, which is a nice thing. Will is more suave and charming. Jacob is more scholarly and bookish and constantly writing down their adventures. Will clearly has shit more in control most of the time, and Jacob's a little more kind of fed up with, like, their entire sort of thing that they do, but still goes along with it. There is real magic in this world, but they still run cons because, again, when you go into this movie, you know what's going to happen. You know they're going to see some magic shit and they're like, oh shit, magic's real. I don't care about that. So I just want that to already be from the start established. I want to cut the sister business because it doesn't add enough to me, at least. Like I said, the moment where, you know, magic is real, so Jacob deserves an apology, never really happens. So I just don't want to deal with that in this. It's a lot heavier than something I feel this movie could sustain.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like everyone else, remove the French Napoleonic Wars business and Cavaldi, whatever the fuck his name was. Instead of Angelica in this version, she is the character Rose Red, who is from A Brothers Grimm's fairy tale. Mm. She has summoned the brothers to her small village because an evil queen has risen from the dead in her castle and is luring children to her. They determine that from what they have researched and come across in their lives, that this is the wicked queen from the Snow White tale, and they need to find Snow White to stop this evil queen, since Snow White defeated her years ago. But after she left off with her prince, no one really knows where she went. So she's out there somewhere in God knows where. In the end, we find out that the evil queen is in fact still dead. Snow White is actually the evil queen. In a desperate attempt to stay the fairest in the land, she's calling children to steal their youth by sending them into her magic mirror. As her reflection becomes younger, so does Snow White. In the end, they break the mirror, which ages Snow White rapidly, and she crumbles to dust. We leave it with a cliffhanger where the Grimms and Rose go to rescue Hansel and Gretel. There you go.
Woo! I guess, final bit, would you guys recommend this movie?
Nah.
I can't really. No, there are better Terry Gilliam movies.
It's not great.
Yeah, there are better, like, fairy tale mashup movies.
There's
that
better
sort of
Terry Gilliams.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, not really. I like Heath Ledger's performance. That's the one thing I walk away from this movie being like, oh, he was really good in this. But aside from that, I can't justify spending 2 hours of my time to just watch him in this
movie. He had some good moments. I liked his little, like, weird kind of contained dancing.
Yeah,
he was
I liked
doing
his
at the end.
At the end, too, where he's, like, holding the book and sort of, like, dancing by himself.
Swaying, yeah, it was cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, mostly this movie is just sort of boring and stupid.
Yeah, it's not what I wanted it to be in any way, shape, or form. It's not entertaining enough to justify paying attention to it. It's not good enough to stand on its own. It's not a fun enough fairy tale, like, retelling or dark version to justify getting invested in the story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, if you guys want to keep track of us outside of the podcast, you can find us on facebook.com/ywatch.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to our website, drophack.com/ywatch. More no. content there eventually in the new year?
Yeah, I think it's just drafthack.com actually is the website.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The /ywatch is just for Facebook. Also, obviously, the podcast can be found on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Hey, and if you want to really wish us a happy new year, maybe write us a review. Give us a 5-star
sure.
rating. That would
be
great.
Give us some ratings. If you have less than a 5-star rating, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, you're our friends.
I don't care.
All right, let's just fucking buy this out.
You?
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.